high dropout rate?
Yes, but I was never able to tell how much of it was economic. Even though it was free, so many of these young people had to add to the family resources.
Well, the Depression effect was still there, too.
Oh, it was the height of the Depression, or the depths, whatever. And there were, I remember, about 750 who were graduated. So the, for whatever reason, and it was largely economic, for whatever reason, they lost half their people by graduation time. And what I did is that I was interested in everything. So I took extra math and extra physics, and predominantly, however, I took chemistry and biology because I was thinking about the medical profession. So the major amount went into chemistry and biology. There were about 150 people who hoped to get into medical school. About four or five did. I was not one of them. I tried. And I continued that pursuit by going up to the graduate biology school at Harvard. This had to do at our own expense. The funds, I lived on a shoestring. The funds mostly came from the fact that my sister was working at that time. But they were not interested in having me at Harvard Medical School, and they weren't interested in encouraging me to go on in the biology department, even though my coursework was quite satisfactory. I received in two successive years from the Harvard Medical School a very nice letter says that I'm not being accepted, but that I shouldn't take this to mean that I don't qualify. So it goes.
Do you know any more of the background?
Of course. Let me not say.
Could I come back to CCNY for a moment? Because CCNY was famous for producing chemistry majors, a very strong chemistry department, turning out 40, 50 majors a year at that time. Was your degree in chemistry, or was it biology?
They didn't bother with that.
I see. It was just
they weren't so keen on that. They didn't give anybody degrees in biology or chemistry, so I got a Bachelor of Science degree, and that Bachelor of Science degree could mean all kinds of things distributed amongst individuals. But what they were more concerned in turning out a well-rounded individual, and to the extent that it was possible, I think they did a really excellent job. Again, I took so many courses that I could have graduated a half a year earlier, but they didn't make me do so, so I stayed on until the end of the year.
The 1930s was a really brilliant
time in
New York City.
Yes.
Was this obvious in
CCNY? I felt that I was around youngsters who to me were just unbelievably good. They were virtuosos, and it was obvious that these were very, very sharp kids. It was obvious in their performance, in the way they performed on exams, in their responsiveness in the classes, and in their interests. They were motivated. They really wanted to absorb everything that there was to be absorbed. And they were very interesting youngsters. They were difficult, though, because they if you wanted to succeed along with them, the pressures were really on. They, The school set high standards. The youngsters set higher standards. And it was work. It was hard work. And if one adds that to all the laboratory courses, there was just no time.
Let me make a quick check of this.
So,
we were talking about CCNY.
Yes.
Two or three weeks ago, I was at Cornell talking to Harold Chiraga.
Yes.
Who was also, who actually entered CCNY the year you graduated.
Yes.
And he described some of the political activism that was existent at CCNY at that time. Did you encounter any of that?
Yes, there was quite a bit of it. I was an observer. These were strongly motivated, idealistic young people who were terribly upset about the Depression. They were easily influenced by leftist philosophies that theoretically could turn things around and make this world a much better place to live in. And there was therefore certainly a significant number of youngsters who considered themselves aligned with socialistic and communistic philosophies of the time. What they couldn't possibly know, if nothing else, that the reality of these philosophies is very different than the principles of the philosophy. I felt that at least most of them were very decent and well motivated, but I had my suspicions, and so I was never attracted to it and didn't participate in it, but I witnessed it. There was the Spanish Civil War, for example, and there were a large number of young people, I believe, who had left the college to go over to Spain to fight. I think it was called the Lincoln Brigade or something of that sort. Yes. It wasn't a great part of the scene, but there would be times when I remember there were confrontations between these students and some issue that they had. I don't really remember the issues. I remember one issue once. I don't remember the rest. And they would have some campus speeches. That's as far as they ever went to demonstrating. The thought of wrecking furniture or sitting in an office they weren't supposed to be in never occurred to them. So the worst that ever got to be was that they would collect around the flagpole and kind of make speeches that would inspire each other. The one issue that I remember is that perhaps the second year I was there, there were students coming from fascist Italy, and they were to appear in the auditorium at a gathering of the students, and there was a confrontation between a small number of the students who objected and the president of the university. That was the only issue that I can recall.
Were there any professors you had there that had any influence, or?
After I left the place, I had heard that one or two of them ran afoul of McCarthy and his people. And there may have been such amongst the people who would identify themselves as leftists. But I don't recall in the course of my going there any political influence whatsoever on me or the people, or an attempt on me or the people. When I went to class, they stuck to business. So, I can't say that I remember them particularly in that light. There was a gentleman who was in charge of the embryology department, whose name I don't remember. It may have been Parker, maybe. I didn't have him for my class. I had another gentleman who was there. I liked them, and I enjoyed that course. And in fact, to the extent that I did any special work in anything when I went to Harvard, it was in embryology. I was impressed by the people in the physics and the math departments. There was a gentleman who was a very famous philosopher, Maurice Raphael Cohen, and he impressed everybody. Somehow he had a head and a face that looked like the epitome of intellectuality. It sort of started narrow, and it got bigger and bigger for the brain cavity. And he would just come across as somebody who knew everything. He was instantly knowledgeable. He lectured in the logic course, and his logic was unimpeachable. He was an excellent mathematician. This was his specialty at one time, and he just seemed to be the sage of the ages. He was a very impressive individual.
Did you do any research as an undergraduate?
No.
What is the background on your decision
to
create medicine?
Well, I think my mother probably had some influence in it. I also was, I must say, impressed with the physicians whom I knew personally. Maybe, for example, I got better anyway, but I knew there were two family physicians. One was a rather young man who was a specialist in obstetrics and gynecology, who the female members of the family would thought very highly of, and he progressed very well, and he taught in the New York University Medical School and so forth, and his operations were attended and that sort of thing. He was an expert in this field. And there was another man, an ear, nose, and throat otolaryngologist, who was a family physician, also had a high position in the medical profession. I found these people rather mm-hmm. impressive and so mm-hmm. forth. So I thought that medicine was attractive. I think that one of the things that I did that cut down on my chances to get in, bad as they were anyway, was that I was very truthful about saying that my interest was to get into medical research. And the family physician thing was rather secondary. This was at a time when I think the points of view, too, in the medical schools were to train people to be physicians and not research people. Mm-hmm. At least I was told that. I had that impression. I must say that as I've become older in this world and have realized how limited medical knowledge was, particularly in the 30s. It turned around when we got antibiotics and so forth greatly in the 40s. I just read an autobiography of a well-known physician who writes about this. That mostly we used to watch people die in the 30s and before. After that, we could do something about it. But I really thought that physicians could do more than they could at the time.
You spent a year at Harvard. Can you give us a background on that year? Why did you apply to Harvard? What were your experiences like at Harvard?
Well, I thought that part of my difficulties in this world were coming from New York City and going to City College, and I wanted to go to a place that was considered very fine in the academic circles and so forth. So I did go there because the name was Harvard. But there were, of course, a few other places that I would also consider under similar circumstances. But this was fine. I applied and they accepted me, and I attended the place. I hoped that it would benefit me. I think in some respects it has, both in terms of the fact that I did learn a lot there. I think it helped me get the job in the New York State Health Department, which was largely a chemical, biological type job.
You said you had you left Harvard. I think that was appears you had a hiatus before you took the job at the. What were you thinking about when you left Harvard? Did you formulate any career goals at that point?
I didn't know what I was going to do. I wanted to go on in graduate school, and I did indeed apply to others. I actually did a little research thing that I had written up, and I sent copies of it. I just got negative replies. I remember one place that I applied to, for example, was the University of Wisconsin. And I knew that I needed some sort of financial support because my family couldn't provide it. And I didn't want to take advantage of my sister. So I didn't know what I was going to do. I might mention that during that summer I had an on and off job selling tickets to an amusement ride. And I remember one of my good friends who has made a successful career. He was young and very bright. Came by this box that I was selling tickets from, and he said, there's a closing date, but this is a lab technician's job at the health department. Why don't you fill it out and send it in? And I did that. Except for this chance circumstance, I wouldn't have done anything, I don't suppose. And I filled it out. They then asked me to take an exam sometime in the fall. I found it not too difficult. And finally, around, perhaps Christmas time, the first of the year, they asked me to report up there. And I may not have been the highest one on the list because I had no experience, and they count experience for something. but I was the first one on the list that they could get to. And so I went up there, and I started out by working in a laboratory that examined the bacterial content of water supplies. And then later on, I went into a laboratory which analyzed chemically water supplies. And that's what I did there most of the time. In fact, my first experience in the research world was to develop a little test for testing fluorine in water supplies. They were just beginning to add it as a civic activity. And I was told later by the head of the lab, who met me while I was a graduate student up at the University of Michigan, that it had been adopted as a general method for water analysis. I was pleased about that. That was my first modest entry into the world of research. During the period that I had left Harvard and before I went up to Albany, I stayed close friends with one of my friends, the one who told me about the exam. He was going to school at night at Cooper Union, and he finished. His name was Roger Gilmont, very successful both as an adjunct professor of thermodynamics at Brooklyn Poly, and he also owns his own chemical and engineering supply company. At any rate, he was studying thermodynamics at the time, and I interested myself in thermodynamics also, and so we would chat about his problems and so forth. And he had a project, a class project that he had to do that he was interested in. And he asked his professor whether he would be permitted to do that. And his professor said that your project can't be done. And then he went to several other people and they told him that it wasn't possible to do this. So he asked me if I would try to do it. And this is a little personally embarrassing, but I solved the problem in 2 days. So he was really pleased about that. This wasn't his whole project, but it was something that he needed in order to proceed with his class project. Mm-hmm. And then it came out. I kept up with thermodynamics when I was working at the health department, and I wanted to do that in graduate school. And the reason why I didn't was that there didn't happen to be anybody at the University of Michigan at the time who was interested in having somebody do a thesis project in thermodynamics. But what Professor Brockway was doing was certainly interesting enough to me. But it was still a long haul between the State Health Department and graduate work at Michigan.
How did you select Michigan eventually?
I knew somebody, some people who were working at the health department, and they extolled the virtues of Michigan to me, and it sounded like a good place. Almost. It was about a year and a half. It was an enjoyable year and a half. The atmosphere was good. And I, although the work was largely routine, I was allowed to do special little projects, for example, developing this fluorine test. And that made it interesting. The gentleman whom I worked for, whose name was F. Wellington Gilcrease, was a really fine gentleman. And I will tell you an anecdote as to just how fine he was, and I didn't realize it at the time. I found there was a three-month probation period. And I found all the nice, competent gentlemen who came up from New York City disappearing after 3 months. And somehow or other I didn't. I was slated to go too. The only reason that I didn't was that he put up a terrific fight for me. I never knew about this until later, somebody told me. And that was the one minus, but I didn't know it. And after the various disappointments and turndowns that I had, I don't know what that would have done to me. I think I would have recovered again. But that was pretty tough sledding. And I used the money that I could save from this technician's job to pay for my first year at Michigan. And the problems weren't over yet. I needed a fellowship for the next year. And I applied for a teaching fellowship and was turned down. So I had a great time, I remember. I found out just before Easter vacation, and I was taking the train home to visit with the folks during the week. And I had a great time thinking about the fact that I was being turned out again. I wasn't going to make it. And this was rather really depressing. My record in school, I knew I had to do well. My record in school at Michigan was really very fine. They had the special grade of A-plus that they could give in graduate school if you did outstanding things, and I had collected in my first semester several A-pluses already. Well, I was doing A work at Harvard, too. So I thought that that this was sort of the end of my rope. Then when I came back, I had finished the quantitative analysis, of course, in record time. And the professor came out to make a great speech about he never saw anybody get the work done so quickly and so accurately, et cetera. And I was great virtue to the class also. But I still didn't have anything to do the next year. So this same gentleman, Lee Case, who was so nice to Isabella in his own way, a real fine gentleman. While I was cleaning up in the lab in this quant course, he came over and he said to me that he had a request from Johns Hopkins. They desperately want good graduate students in chemistry. And he says, I'm pretty sure you can get it if you want it. He says, do you want it? So I let him know I wanted it. And he said, that's fine. And I then decided that I would go to Professor Brockway, who I had a kind of a tentative arrangement with, to tell him what my circumstance was, that I was going to take this fellowship in Johns Hopkins unless something could be done here at Michigan. To his great surprise, Brockway says,